This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 452, and today we are talking about books being released on March 5th, 2024, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Danica Ellis, and we're coming to you from bookriot.com. Danica, hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Well, you and I just had a very long conversation about all the things that have been going on in the last several days.
Yeah, including our pet woes.
Yes, pet woes. Yeah. If you listened to the show last week, I received a call about an emergency visit right before we started recording. So it's been a very busy week since then. And yeah, so I have not actually read the books for this week, which is very rare for me. Oh, I take it back. I have read my last pick. But it's very rare for me. But, you know, these things happen, you know. So I'm still excited about them. And you're going to talk about books. And, yeah, I don't know what else. Yeah.
We'll still be talking about just as many books. They'll just be anticipated.
Yeah. I'm excited about the ones that you have.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, because it's an amazing day for new releases.
It really is. Yeah.
It's huge. So what else do I have to tell you? The area code 452 is another general purpose area code. That was like 451 and 452. So I say you take it and use it for whatever you want. Like this middle desk drawer right here that I'm opening, this is going to be, that's area code 452 right in there. So I claimed it right there.
Perfect.
You know, and anyone else can use it for what they want. It's fine. Yeah. Let's see. We're going to have to, someday, you know, when we're on like, like 100,000 years from now, we'll start doing zip codes.
Yeah.
I think a couple of times I have said like zip codes and, it's like, that would be like a really lot of episodes. Is that even correct grammar? I don't know. I've had like 11 hours of sleep in the last 5 days. So everyone forgive me.
Yeah.
But things are going to get better. They are. Things are going to get better. It's all going to be okay. Mm-hmm. So I do want to tell you about book clubs, though. Do you want to make your book club the best book club? Of course you do. So sign up for our In the Club newsletter. In the Club will deliver recommendations for the best books to discuss in your book clubs. From buzzy new releases to brilliant throwbacks, the books highlighted in this newsletter will drive your book club discussions. We'll also share some book club-friendly recipes and interesting bookish updates from all over. If you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations plus community features. In other words, we'll keep you well-met, well-read, and well-fed. Visit bookriot.com/intheclub to sign up. That's bookriot.com/intheclub. Have you ever been in a book club?
Yeah, I actually just started joining a queer book club that I found on Meetup, and it's great. We read the Telegraph Club last night at the Telegraph Club, and I loved it.
Is that an online thing?
No, it's in person. Yeah.
See, I don't know. That's funny. I did one when our local indie opened. Like, they had a book club. And I went a couple of times. We read Seabiscuit.
Oh, yeah. Which,
and also The Professor and the Poet and the Murderer. That's what it was. Not The Professor and the Madman. That's the dictionary one. Yeah. The Poet and the Murderer, about the bomber and the Emily Dickinson forger. Forgerer? Forger? Yeah, not forgerer. So that was cool. But then I stopped going. I don't know what happened.
You've got a lot of reading obligations already.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah, that was like 20 years ago, though.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's what stopped me from doing book clubs before is that I'm like, oh, I already have all these books I have to read. But now I just pop in for the ones that I either already have read or were already on my TBR. So,
yeah. I think, you know, I am team just attend anyway, whether it's, yeah. it's an event or whether it's a book club. Like, even if you haven't read the book, mm-hmm. socializing,
yeah.
you might get some spoilers, but, you know, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about books now. But before we do that, we are going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be, right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong, gotta go on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number 6. So if he is to have 7 great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay. My first pick for today is The Great Divide by Christina Henriquez, one of the most anticipated novels of the year. Henriquez is the author of many books, including The Book of Unknown Americans, which I think is a book that we possibly talked about at one of the Book Riot Live recordings. I could be wrong, though. I seem to remember discussing that for some panel or something, but... The Great Divide is a historical novel about a group of unknown people, the workers who helped build the Panama Canal. You probably have heard of the Panama Canal. You have a pretty good idea. Basically, what I remember reading about it or learning about it in school is like the locks. You know, like they let the water in, the boats go up, they let the water out, you know. But it's an artificial 82 kilometer or, you know, almost 51 miles for those of us who were abandoned in the middle of learning the metric system in America when they were children. It's a waterway in Panama that connects the Atlantic Ocean with the Pacific Ocean. It cuts right through the Isthmus of Panama, and it helped people like revolutionize, you know, travel and shipping and all this stuff. There were several countries that took interest in this, you know, before it happened. Thousands and thousands of people were hired. They basically built like this town of workers. And it was divided. It was another great divide by race and class. You know, the workers lived in terrible conditions while the people overseeing the project had houses and better food and hired help. The French actually started the project on the canal, and an estimated 22,000 workers died from disease and accidents in the time that they worked on it. And they ran out of money, and so the U.S. took over and lost another 5,600 workers to disease and accidents. And nobody talks about them. I mean, that's a lot of people. And, like, nobody talks about that part of it. Not many people know who these people were. And this novel imagines the lives of some of the people who were there. One of them is a young woman named Ada, who has run away from her home in Barbados to find work at the canal so that she can pay for her sister's surgery. Her sister is very sick, and she and her mother don't have the money to get the surgery, so Ada wants to send money home. Another is a local fisherman who resents the building of the canal. He resents the intrusion on his country, and he is angry when his son takes a job working the construction on the canal. Another is a couple who live in a great big house at the top of the hill. They're American. He is a scientist who is studying malaria, and he gets a chance to go down and do his work. And he brings his wife with him. And when she gets ill, he hires Ada, the young woman from Barbados, to care for her. Henriquez is an amazing writer. I've read like the first 50 pages of this, and it's fantastic. I love reading about parts of history that we don't hear about as much, parts of history that need attention, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. You know, it's fascinating. And you know, I wonder like how long it would take them to build this canal now, like in this day and age, like with everything that we have. I've been thinking about that a lot the last couple of days, and I'm looking forward to finishing it. It's The Great Divide by Christina Henriquez.
I feel like that one's a popular book club pick, if I'm remembering right. I think a lot of people are talking about it.
Oh, yeah, I bet it would be.
All right. My first pick I want to talk about is Thunder Songs, Essays by Sasha Tocsheblou-Lapointe. This was one of my 5-star predictions for the year, and I'm very happy that it lived up to that expectations. It was totally a 5-star read for me. It's a collection of essays about being a queer Indigenous woman in the U.S. today. And the first essay begins with her talking about her 83-year-old great-grandmother who called up the Seattle Symphony and said, "I would like to commission a symphony." And they politely turned her down and said, "That's not really how it works." And then she called back every week to ask, "How's my symphony going?" Until eventually they agreed and they made a symphony with her. And there's actually now a documentary about the making of that orchestral work. And it was just performed again a few years ago. But from that first essay, I was totally hooked. I love just this idea of just keep calling back every week until they agree. And in all of these essays, she weaves together the past and present, drawing on the stories of her family and community, as well as the political movements of the moment, like Black Lives Matter. She talks about traditional stories as well as pop culture. And as the title suggests, music plays a big role in this collection, including her days as one of the only Indigenous people in the punk scene in Seattle. I took so many notes while reading this that I don't really know how to talk about this or where to start, because I basically just want to summarize all the essays, which is not very useful, but I just found them all really interesting and great conversation starters, really thought-provoking, and drawing on both her personal experiences and how that reflects these larger political realities. She talks about the many ways that colonization impacts Indigenous people today, from generational trauma to the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. She talks about how she worries about her niece and how she says, "I want my niece to know she's worth more than a red dress waving in the breeze. I never want her to question that the whole world would stop if she ever went missing." One of the images that really stuck with me was how she described the tulip festival that takes place on her culture's land, and how it is this metaphor for what they've lost, because that land was originally marsh and then was really dramatically altered by settlers and is now basically unrecognizable for the people who have lived off it for many, many generations. And then there's the tourists that come in for the actual tulip festival that just shut down the entire area and make it so that what would usually be a 20-minute drive would take hours. And it's so representative of what they have to deal with every day. And then it also touches on her queer identity and discovering the term Two-Spirit and how Two-Spirit people were often sacred in many Indigenous cultures, and how the shame that she took on from her identity is the work of generations of colonization, and talks about needing the freedom to embrace her queer heart and let it run wild through the relationship, which I really loved. But there's so much I want to talk about. There are so many, I keep just kind of cornering people and telling them stories from this collection. She talks about decolonizing her diet, her complicated relationship with her mother. There's this beautiful and heartbreaking story about a Little Mermaid jacket and her questioning motherhood and the experience of going through the COVID-19 pandemic as a part of a culture where disease was used as an attempted genocide against them. These are so compelling and thought-provoking, these essays. And I obviously really highly recommend them. Even though they touch on heavy, difficult topics, this is fundamentally a story about healing and survival and resistance. And I definitely will be reading her previously published memoir, Red Paint, next, because I just loved this so much. I want to give content warnings for miscarriage, racism, rape, addiction, generational trauma, and abusive relationships. And that's Thundersong Essays by Sasha Taxablu Lapointe.
That is at the top of my list to read.
Oh, it's so
good. Also, I wonder if I call my bank every day and say, how's that deposit you were going to put in my account? Like, eventually they just be like, fine, yeah. Okay.
I feel like there's probably much more you could get if you did that than you imagine, you know?
Yeah, just keep pestering people.
Yeah, just very politely.
I don't know. I don't recommend it. Maybe when I'm 83.
Yeah. It's a good strategy.
So my other pick for today that I'm looking forward to reading is The Hunter by Tana French. This is the follow-up to The Searcher. I know you're all looking for Rob's story from In the Woods, but we may just have to come to terms with the fact that we're just not going to know what happened. Maybe, I mean, I have no idea. I don't know Tana French. We might get that story, but for right now, still no. The Searcher, which came before The Hunter, is about Cal Hooper, who is a retired Chicago police officer. He buys a fixer-upper, a super fixer-upper, like abandoned for 20 years house in a very, very teeny village in Ireland. He's recently divorced. He has a grown daughter. He's not communicating with well. He wants to get away from his ex-wife and just everything, basically. So he goes and moves to Ireland to have some time to think. He's fixing the whole place up by himself. He's learning how to do everything. He doesn't tell anyone that he is a retired police officer, you know, when he gets there, but somehow everyone knows, you know, small towns, they know everything. And he ends up meeting a young boy who asks him to help him find his missing brother, who the cops have written off as a runaway. That's the plot of the first book. And it's just all just character driven, and the scenery is just incredible. And you're like 25% of the way into the book before you even find out like why the kid is talking to him, which is it's in the description. Like, I'm not spoiling it, but like, that's like how amazing it is. You just keep reading about this guy remodeling his house basically for, you know, the first 25%. But I haven't read The Hunter yet. I started it and then was like, oh, I want to read The Searcher again, and didn't get back to it. But this one also involves Cal, and a character who was mentioned but not around in the first book. So I'm excited. Like, I've read all of her books, except for this one, obviously. And, you know, I have found almost every single one to be such a meaty, satisfying mystery crime story. She's just amazing. And I have to tell you, they sent me a box. It was like the size of a shoebox. And it came in the mail, and I brought it into my house, and I tracked it through my house and then set it down without opening. I didn't know what it was yet. I went to get something, and as I'm walking back to get, I was going to get the scissors so I could open the box. I was like, what is all this crunching under my feet? And I looked, and I was like, there was all this little stuff on the floor, like this whole trail of it, and I didn't know what it was. And so it seemed to lead right to that box. So I opened up the box, and like, obviously this is not their fault. You know, these things happen. The box was not in great shape. They had sent a copy of The Hunter and a paperback of The Searcher with a very large tin of Irish breakfast tea, which had gotten crushed and the lid had popped off and had leaked out of the box and like just filled the whole box. It was like inside the jacket of the book. Oh my goodness. It took me forever to clean it up. And then my husband came home and he was like, oh, it smells really good in here. And I was like, yeah. It smells like tea that you can't have because it was all in the box. But yeah, sometimes that swag doesn't work out. So that's my exciting tea story. And the book is The Hunter by Tana French.
I love the idea of it just trailing tea, especially because it must have been doing that before it got to you too. Just being delivered, just trailing tea down the street.
That's what's so weird to me is that, you know, there was so much in there. Like, you can see that you, like, I put the pictures up on Instagram in my stories. Like, people were like, whoa. I'm like, that is loose tea, like, on the loose tea. There was so much of it. And I looked at the, you know, the mailbox, and there wasn't that much in there. And I was like, did they put it in the box and then stomp it? Like, I don't understand what happened. But that's basically what it looked like.
Yeah.
But, It was, yeah, because I was like, is my stuffing coming out? Because it looked like pencil shavings. I'm like, you know, is my head leaking? I don't know what's happening here. I had no idea.
Yeah. So that, you wouldn't immediately think, oh, it's probably loose tea coming out of this book box.
Yeah. I didn't know what it was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My next pick, I have no connection to tea as far as I know. But my next pick is The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft, which is a book I really wasn't planning on reading. I've talked before about how what I do is I just download a whole bunch of new releases, the advanced reader copies, for the day this goes up. And then I read like the first few pages of all of them. And this one really grabbed me, even though it wasn't what I had planned to read. It is by a well-respected translator. So Jennifer Croft translates books from Polish, Ukrainian, and Argentine Spanish. She won the 2018 Man Booker Prize for translation. And I mention this because this is a book about translation and translators. And it begins with a translator's note, which specifically is a translator's warning by Alexis Archer, who explains that the translator, is a character in this story, and that her character is the villain of the story, and that it was a very difficult thing for her to translate because of it. And she also talks about how the author's first language is Spanish, but chose to write this book in Polish, and that her native language haunts the pages, which have now been translated into English by Alexis. And this weird dynamic of reading a book translated by someone who is the villain of the book they're translating was so fascinating to me that it immediately jumped to the top of my TBR. And throughout, there are occasional footnotes with commentary or corrections from the translator. And it also didn't hurt that the translator note mentions that though the plot is inspired by true events, she can't say which parts are true and that besides, she lives in Mongolia, which, quote, has no extradition treaty with Poland, or for that matter, the United States, and then says, I barely escaped after more than 7 toxic, harrowing, oddly arousing, extremely fruitful weeks. And I don't know about you, but that translator note really hooked me, and I had to know more. It's such a hard book to even talk about because there's multiple layers of authors and translators, and it begins with plural first-person narration, where these 8 translators are all referred to as we, and if they are referred to as individuals at all, it's as their language. So the author is called Spanish, and the translator is called English, and they worship the capital A author, Irina Ray. I feel like this is already so confusing trying to talk about this. But yes, Irina Ray is the author that they translate for. Every time she writes a new book, they come to this one location and they all translate it together in this semi-sacred space. And she has demands of them, like you're never allowed to mention the weather, and they're not allowed to translate any other Polish authors. It's only her. So it's already a weird situation. They really do worship her. But when she shows up this time, she is behaving strangely, and her husband isn't there without explanation. She also is very reluctant to actually show them her new book. So they're a little bit weirded out, but they, you know, muddled through. And then they wake up in the morning and she is gone. And the translators have no idea what to do next. Like I said, this is a hard story to explain. It's also a little over the top, a little surreal. Like, Irina Ray is the best author who's ever lived. She affects the world in really dramatic ways with her novels. She is larger than life. And the translators' decisions are questionable. They are squabbling with each other a lot. The main character is both attracted to and repulsed by this new translator who just came for the first time this time and who doesn't worship the author like the rest of them do. And as the introduction promised, Alexis and the main character end up butting heads in very interesting ways. Despite the strangeness of this book, or probably because of it, I was compelled to know what happened next, even though it's really not very plot heavy. Like, I have basically described 90% of the plot, but it is so interesting and strange that I really wanted to know what was going to happen next. I'm confident that I am missing things about what this book is trying to do because I don't really know anything about translation or all of these different languages and the significance of having them lined up with these different characters. It discusses the philosophy of translation and translation as identity. It's also theoretically about extinction and climate change and fungi and a Polish forest. And I finished it not really knowing what it was about still, or exactly what happened, or why it happened. But I had a great time reading it. I was completely absorbed, even though it went over my head at times. These characters are very interesting and dramatic. And again, even though I think I missed things, it was just such a fun reading experience. I do want to give some content warnings for a discussion of war, as well as mentions of the Holocaust. And that is The Extinction of Irina Ray by Jennifer Croft.
All right. That's another one I'm very excited to read.
I would love to hear what you think of it, because I don't it's hard to read in isolation, I think.
Yeah. Because this is where my brain is at this week. You know, I go through the catalogs and I look at social media and I do all this stuff and I write down all these books in my master list of like upcoming books that I'm interested in. But occasionally, like, they come in the mail and I haven't heard of them and I don't have them. So the other day I got a book called The Translator in the mail and I like typed it into my list and I'm like, okay, who's the translator? And then it doesn't have a translator. It's just called The Translator. But then again, later I was like, I forgot to put the translator for this book. And then it's like, oh no, there isn't a translator. It's just called the translator. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the time I almost like broke my neck trying to take a photo of my new phone. You know, it's like in my hand.
Yeah.
But I'm very like Jennifer Croft is amazing. Mm-hmm. She's won like a gazillion awards.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to see like what her first novel is like. So.
Yeah. Let me know your thoughts when you finish it.
Yeah. The cover also kind of reminds me of the book that came out a few months ago. Oh, goodness. Now I'm going to forget the title, though. Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind. Did you read that one?
I don't think I've seen that
one. By Molly
McGee. No.
Oh, yeah. It's got like this weird, like brightly green, blue thing going on. And I was like, oh, that reminds me of this one. So, which is also a very strange book that I really enjoyed that I did not understand at all. So,
those are fun sometimes.
Hey, I am completely down with those kinds of books. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
As long as you enjoy it, you know, exactly. If you're like, I don't know what's going on or why this is happening and I'm angry about it, you know, then like, then that's not the book for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Fever Dream. I've read that book 10 times. I still don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I love it. So I'm going to tell you about my next pick. But first, we're going to hear from a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so my next pick is one that came out in hardcover with a smaller press a couple of years ago and is now available in paperback. I heard about it from another rioter and it sounds amazing. It's called The Meister of Desamine City by Brenna Rainey. It's about a scientist who has done amazing work to help humanity, but now all anyone wants to talk about is how her cloned dinosaur horde got loose and destroyed the city. So her talking cloned dinosaur horde, I should mention. And so now everyone thinks she's a villain and a mad scientist. But then an actual villain shows up in the city and the city needs her help again because she has dinosaurs. And also because the actual supervillain is her brother. So this just like sounds like so much fun. I love, you know, weird villain superhero books, you know, Starter Villain and Hench and Soon I Will Be Invincible. So I'm looking forward to checking this one out. It's The Meister of Desamine City by Brenna Rainey.
That is definitely a good hook. have not heard.
Right? Like Talking Dinosaurs. Yeah. I was singing, like, I'm so old I had this single. I was singing Was Not Was, like, Walk the Dinosaur forever after I read about this book. Anyway, your turn.
My turn. So my next pick is Thirst by Marina Yuzuk, which is translated by Heather Cleary. And this is the book I intended to read, and I still am going to read at some point because it's one of my most anticipated releases of the year. Because as anyone who is familiar with my reading taste knows, I love a sapphic vampire book. This is a Latin American feminist gothic told in two time periods. In one, a queer vampire arrives in Buenos Aires from Europe in the 19th century and tries to blend in with society over the centuries. And then in present day Buenos Aires, a woman is overwhelmed with caring for her ill mother on top of her parenting responsibilities as a single mother. And then she meets this vampire in a graveyard and their two stories collide. From the reviews I've read, this is less of a gothic horror novel and more of a feminist work about grief. Both characters are mourning the losses in their lives. But even though vampirism isn't the main focus, it's still a vampire novel, so expect some gore and decadence. I'm hearing it compared to Carmen Maria Machado, and so far, everyone I know who has read it has loved it. And as I mentioned before, I have a sapphic book blog called The Lesberry. We get tons of sapphic books for review, and I think this book might be the most reviews a book got before its release date, because at least three of my reviewers immediately jumped on it, and they all loved it. So I'm excited to join them. And that is Thirst by Marina Yuzuk, translated by Heather Cleary.
Yeah, I really want to read that one. Yeah. I've been in a super vampire mood the last few months. And it's like, I don't have time to go back and read all my vampire books that I used to read. Mm. You know, like I have all my old ones. But there's so many new ones now.
Yeah.
They all sound so good. But like, yeah, this week has been the busiest week I've had in forever. And my, you know, my hamster in my brain is like, hey, don't you want to read Interview with a Vampire? Like right now. I'm like, yes, I do, but I don't have any. It's like, just get it out and see what happens. And I'm like, no. So yeah, I'm looking forward to all the vampire-y things.
Yeah.
I don't have a vampire book for my next pick. But this is the cutest kids book I've seen in a very long time. And definitely going to be my favorite of the year. It's a picture book called Luigi, the Spider Who Wanted to Be a Kitten by Michelle Knudsen and Kevin Hawks. This is the team that did Library Lion, which is an amazing picture book. And this one is about, well, Luigi. Actually, it's about a spider who is quite large. He appears to be, like, hand-sized and very furry. And one day he meets this woman. He's hiding in the corner of her house. And she's like, oh, look at you. I've always wanted a kitten. I'm going to name you Luigi. So from then on, he is Luigi. And, you know, he wants to stay in the house because people are usually like, spiders, smoosh them. And this lady is like, oh, you're so cute. So he's like, I'm going to be a kitten. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to be a kitten. And he keeps working really hard to try and be a kitten. And it's adorable. So it's so, so cute. It's Luigi the Spider Who Wanted to Be a Kitten by Michelle Knudsen and Kevin Hawks. And last night I read another kid's picture book that fell into my lap, basically, that is adorable, called Bunny Should Be Sleeping by Amy Hest and Renata Luska. It's about a little bunny who goes to bed, but then his dad forgets to come in and say goodnight to him, so he can't go to sleep until his dad says goodnight. So he gets up and he does all these other things, like while he's waiting for his dad to come in and, you know, be part of their nightly routine. And it's adorable as well. So Bunny Should Be Sleeping, also cute. And those are my two. I do like what, like a picture book recommendation, like once every 6 months. So those are them.
Well, I'm going to squeeze in one more kids book I read that's out today too. Then it's a middle grade graphic novel called The Baker and the Bard by Fern Haught. And it is, the subtitle is A Cozy Fantasy Adventure. And that's exactly what it is. It is a very cute little cozy fantasy comic with a non-binary character. And basically, if you liked the Tea Dragon Society, you will like this one. It's adorable. It's very gentle. And it was exactly what I wanted it to be. I wasn't initially going to talk about it because that's all I have to say. It's a short comic that is a very quick read, but it is delightful. So I recommend that one as well. But for my last official pick, I wanted to talk about Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange, who I feel like probably doesn't need an introduction, but just in case, he is the author of the 2018 book There, There, which was a finalist for a Pulitzer, as well as winning the Penn Hemingway Award and the American Book Award. This is a companion novel to it, following the legacy of the Sand Creek Massacre of 1864 and the Carlisle Indian Industrial School all the way up until the events of There, There. So I've heard it's kind of both prequel and sequel to that book. You get the events before and then some of the events afterwards. So it begins with Star, a survivor of the Sand Creek Massacre, as he is forcibly taught English and Christianity by the man who would go on to found Carlisle Indian Industrial School, which Star's son would one day attend. And I think this is something that should be talked about more, because in recent years in Canada, especially after the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, there has been an emphasis and learning about what were called Indian residential schools here. And even though the U.S. has a very similar history of what they call American Indian boarding schools, I really don't see that history discussed very often. So I hope that this book brings that horrific part of history to light, because it is hard to overstate the trauma that these so-called schools inflicted and how devastating the generational effects have been, both in terms of psychological trauma and genocidal cultural erasure. So if you haven't heard about these, I definitely recommend looking them up or picking up a book about them. And then, like I said, it also has a future timeline, or it has a present day timeline. So we follow generations of this family up until the events of There, There. And then afterwards, where Opal and her nephews, Orville and Loni, are struggling to deal with the aftermath of Orville almost being killed in a shooting. And Orville turns to prescription drugs and compulsively watching videos of school shootings while Loni self-harms. And they, as a family, are struggling to try to connect to their Cheyenne heritage, to try to heal. This sounds like a poetic, rage-inducing, and challenging book, and I've only ever heard great things about Tommy Orange. So that's my last recommendation, Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange.
All right. So, yeah, what are you going to read next?
Yeah, I am currently reading 42, The Wildly Improbable Ideas of Douglas Adams, which is edited by Kevin John Davies. I love Hitchhiker's Guide, and I've also read several biographies of Douglas Adams, which I recommend because he is or was such an interesting person. So I was very excited to see this collection of his unpublished papers, and I am having a great time flipping through them. What are you going to read next?
Well, first of all, he'll have been gone 23 years this year. It doesn't seem possible.
Yeah.
And if you've never read Douglas Adams, you know, you can always start. You can always celebrate your first towel day in May on the 25th, true, if that's something you want to do. So yeah, I just loved him.
Yeah.
I am going to read God Bless You, Otis Spunkmeyer by Joseph Earl Thomas, which comes out on June 18th. I loved his memoir, Sink, which came out, was it last year? I think it was last year, but it might have even been the year before now. And one of my favorite Kurt Vonnegut novels is God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. So I was like, well, then it must, you know, I'm putting them together in my head. This is going to be amazing, which I really need because the last few things that I've picked up, I've just been like, meh.
Oh, meh. No.
Yeah, I hit a little slump. It doesn't keep me from trying, but the fact that I read everything all the way to the end, even when I don't like it, probably doesn't help.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm almost 50 and I still do it. My, you know, my boss at the indie bookstore used to be like, you're going to get over it someday. Apparently not yet.
Grow out of it.
Because I'm still doing it. So maybe someday. Anyway, that is it for us today, book lovers. Thank you for joining us. You can visit bookriot.com/in the club to sign up. That's bookriot.com/in the club. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. And you can find us online. Danica, where can people find you online?
You can find me at the Lesbury, LESBRARY.com.
All right. And I mostly hang out on Instagram at FranzenComesAlive. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and we appreciate it. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, it's time for my nap. So you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.